I can't believe I made such a rookie mistake as to only compliment the basses. Sopranos, altos, tenors, my apologies. I think, uneducated ear, the basses sometimes are lost because they don't get as many opportunities to shine. And so when you get a chance to sort of hear that resonant lowness, it's such a delight because it doesn't get featured to me as much as the other voices do. And that was why I was lifting up the basses. But as a former second soprano, certainly it is such a gift to hear all of the voices, and especially after such a beautiful, beautiful piece. It's probably a good morning for me to be making rookie mistakes because I've been thinking a lot about back when I was a young student minister, not that long ago. When I was a young student minister, I would always meet with my supervisor, whose name was Woody, in his office, which was also the church's administrative space. He had a desk and a chair, and I had a chair, and we were surrounded by the copier and tables with lots on them, reams of paper and paper cutters and hole punchers and file folders and calendars and computers and everything that fetches up in a church office, in most offices. There was also a bunch of storage boxes for old records and files under all of the tables. They were real storage boxes with pre-printed fronts on them. They looked not unlike the ones that are on the cover of your order of service. Yes, this is why you have such a weird order of service cover. You know there's always a reason. They weren't exactly like these. The ones that they had a section, it was divided into quarters. And one quarter said from, which is where you can write either the origins or the original date of the materials. And then to, which is either where it was going to or the date that the materials ended at, right? And then there was contents, which was obviously to describe what was inside the box. And then destroy for the date, I know, for the date by which the content would no longer be required or relevant. And I used to look at those boxes in our meetings. Mostly the labels were blank, which is not super useful, because they were full. Anyway, but I would think how organized and tidy and appealing they looked. How nice it would be if life was at all like this. If everything in life could effectively be dealt with by those boxes. If we always knew exactly the date on which an issue arose, and if we knew exactly the date when it ended, and if we could easily say exactly what everything was, and if, this would be so freeing, we definitely knew when we would no longer need it, or when we would be done with it, and have that freeing scheduled and written down, totally ready to go. That line of thinking was a kind of recurring cycle whenever I was meeting with Woody in the office because it was so obvious, especially to a young student minister, that life was nothing like that. Things slowly arose into awareness and everything was complicated and required lots of explanation and it was hard to sum up or to categorize. Nowadays we call that intersectionality, but back then we just called it complicated. And it was never clear. It was never clear if or when I was ever really done with anything or anyone. Those storage boxes were an illusion to me. And life was messy and hard to manage and so full of flux and evolution and surprises, good and bad, not just for me, but for the church I was learning to serve and all the people going through all the ups and downs and heartbreak and beauty of living. Even then, it was apparent to me that one of the ongoing challenges of being a human being and being a human being living with other human beings was dealing with change. Change in us, in our bodies, in our minds, in what we know and what we know we don't know, in what we think and how we work, and change in our circumstances and context, and then around us in society, and changes in our family and in our friends. I can go on all day just listing all the kinds of change we constantly encounter all the time, but I think you get my point. Now, long before all those meetings in Woody's office, when I was an elementary school age girl, if I had to stay home sick, my mom would buy me little inexpensive books to read that she would get at the grocery store, and I loved it. I loved it. I loved getting the books, I loved reading them, and they really helped being sick be less awful. Now, before I say anything else, I have to be clear, because my mom will be here next week for the Mother's Day service, so. A lot of who I am comes from my mom, and she is a terrific woman. She is strong and smart and brave, and she was a very good mom. With all that, that's all you can say to her next week. With all that, mostly what she bought me as sick presents was Harlequin romances. Yeah. And I enjoyed them. In fact, I kept two all these years because these sick presents, as we called them, were so welcome. So here they are. They were 75 cents each back in the day. The Love Goddess and Gentle Tyrant. The students down front, you should see their faces. Okay. Here's the thing. I gained some useful life wisdom from Harlequin romances. Not so much how to interact with tall, dark, laconic. They were always laconic. That's where I learned that word. Shipping tycoons who didn't talk about their feelings and tended to brusque kisses and cryptic utterances. I know nothing about how to deal with them. The useful life wisdom I gained included, of all things, how to deal with quicksand. Real quicksand. I cannot remember which book it was in, and I checked. I actually read through these, and it was sad how much I remembered once I got started. It wasn't in either of these that I learned it. But in one of them, the heroine had a mentor who taught her survival skills, and one of them was what to do if you ever step into quicksand. And the proper response is so surprising because it is not what you would expect. It doesn't work to try to lift yourself out of it or to wade through it. The only way to safely extract yourself, if you are in real quicksand, which is incredibly rare, is to cast yourself down into it and swim. I know. You're storing it up now, aren't you? It's one of those things. You can't help it. You're like, now I know, swim. Of course, quicksand is not like water. And the action of swimming through it, or I don't know. I doubt it's this. But the act of swimming through it is not easy, and it does not flow. It is hard, and it's slow, and it's exhausting, and it is the only way out. The only way out is through. Now you know where I'm going with this. Quicksand is pretty much the opposite of those tidy storage boxes. And at times, it is what the ever-changing lives we lead feel like. We are going through our days, often fairly challenged already, and then we suddenly find that everything is different because we've lost a loved one. or we receive a diagnosis, or we lose a job, or we fail a class. Ancestry.com tells us we have an unexpected relative. This is happening to people in this church. Our eyes are opened to racism and white supremacy. We lose or gain something that rocks our world, and we find that what we thought was firm ground has become quicksand. Just like in a movie, we are walking along thinking we know where we are and where we're going, and then suddenly we find ourselves sinking in something that feels thick and bottomless, and it is pulling us down. It's funny in a way that we even have to process this, because of course everything changes. We know that. Technically, none of us is the same from one moment to the next. Cells are growing and dying. Every 7 years, our cells have completely changed. We all grow, we all age. Age, some of the toughest change of all. And yet, we do have to process this. In part because when things are good or peaceful or at least better than they were, we want to hang on to that. Just let us dwell in the sweetness and not have to engage with everything else. And the inevitable turning of hours or days that inevitably bring the end of something or someone. And the inevitable next chapters, whether dreaded or hoped for in our lives. So we have to process, because our heart's desire to stop time will never prevail. And we have to process this also because of the difference between change that we choose and change that comes upon us. Nobody is prepared for change that comes like an ambush, or this week, like lava. And nobody is surprised that we resist and mourn sudden devastation. We have all been there. And yet, even change we seek and work for, surprisingly, can still be hard. A job long sought, a degree long pursued, a child long tried for. I don't want to out anybody else's story of the struggle to take in and adapt to a change long sought for, so I'll just give my example. When my husband and I got married, after 6 years of being together, 6 years, unconscionably long, I can say this because he's not here this morning, but really, glacially slow. Anyway, when we got married, after 6 years of being together, and both being in our 40s at that point, and for me, this was my first marriage, it was welcome. And we had worked hard to get there. And still, for me, it was difficult because it was time to change from being a single person, which I had been all the way into my 40s, someone who needed to be reminded to look out for herself, to change to being a married person who needed to look out for my spouse as much as for myself. Not even that. Time to change to a person who needed look out for us. Not me, and not me and him, but more than that, this new wedded creation that was us. I literally even had a new name. And in fact, I chose to take Tim's name, McClay, precisely because I could feel that getting married later in life was hard to change gears, hard to go from being me to us. And I was worried, rightly I think, that my holding back in any way would undermine our marriage. So I was marrying a wonderful guy, we had a wonderful life together, I had no reservations or misgivings about it, and still it was hard on deep levels to absorb this new reality as mine, to absorb this identity as mine, to honor it as I knew I should. I never thought beforehand that getting married would be hard to take in and live up to. But in the beginning, it sometimes felt that way. And it took a whole lot of deliberate work to settle in. And it still takes work. It will always take work to be us instead of me. And I'm grateful every day that I have this work to do and this man to be with, and it is still work. Back in the 1970s, there was a best-selling nonfiction book called Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. He defined future shock as too much change in too short a time, which results in an experience that was memorably described in the book as, and I love this phrase, the premature arrival of the future. It was an important insight when that book came out, and I think it's still important. This is the essence of the challenge of change, even sometimes of good change, even sometimes of change we want or seek. Change is change. And people are creatures of habit. And getting acclimated to change takes effort, and too much change can be hard to accept. I think that is a big part of what's going on in our country right now. It's people struggling to come to terms with all the change that is in the air. People unable to take in all the change. People rejecting change because it overwhelms them. But while that is playing out nationally on a macro level, my concern this morning is the micro level. I don't know how each of us in this room does with change. I don't yet know how this congregation does with change as a church, because I am new here, and I am part of the change. But I know there will be times for each of us in our lives and for all of us together as a beloved community, when we are or will be challenged. We will be challenged by change. So there is something I would offer and something I would ask. The thing I'm offering is the quicksand idea. That when we are struggling with change, the only way out is through. Change of one kind or another will come upon us whether we will or no. When it does, we have to cast ourselves into it and swim to get to where we can gain a handhold and find our way onto firmer ground. Sometimes that firmer ground won't even be what we used to understand firmer ground was. But change changes us along with the things around us. And sometimes we define firm ground in whole new ways because of what we experience and learn in the journey. I was speaking yesterday with someone who's about to be ordained a Unitarian Universalist minister this coming August, and we were talking about her plans for her ordination service, which I will be taking part in. She's been working many, 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 many years for this culmination, and when we were talking about the service, she began to weep. And I asked her why the tears, and she said, because this is so vulnerable. She already had a life, a career she had mastered, a path that was familiar and well-established, but she knew it wasn't what she would be doing if she were living her best life. And so she gave herself to this change, to departing her corporate executive career and starting over in Unitarian Universalist ministry. She is now full of insight and ability. She knows her strengths and weaknesses. She will be a good minister. She doesn't know where she will work as soon as this September or exactly what ministry she will do, but she is giving our faith and our principles everything she has, literally. And what will be, will be. I listened to her and I was reminded not just of the vulnerability in what she's doing, but also the great beauty and the humbling power of the gift of giving your life to something, to recovery from addiction, to parenthood, to caring for another, to marriage, to being part of a net that catches people when they fall. All full of change, all full of grace that we cannot predict and cannot do without. Heraclitus of Ephesus. He was a self-taught philosopher. He lived about 100 years or so before Socrates in the Greco-Persian city of Ephesus, and he is the one who famously said, no one ever steps into the same river twice. And that's tied to his other most famous pronouncement, pandare, or in English, everything flows. His point was that even a great river is not actually ever the same river. The water is moving. With the current, new water comes. It shrinks in a drought. It swells in a flood. The inhabitants come and go, live and die, as do those who ride the river on their own journeys. So yes, life is quicksand, but it is not only quicksand, which is why it is possible to swim our way through even the most quicksand times in our life and find our way to some shore, some firmer ground which does await us, even if it is a different ground entirely than what we trod before. Let us remember that. Let us hold on to that. And let us remember and hold on to this also. We are living in a time of intense tumult that doesn't even take into account the tumult in our personal lives. And this church is on a journey too. And we are all in it together. Every time I talk about being together, I come down to be with you. Here I come. I always like that I can keep talking to you while you can't see me. I feel like a rabbit coming out of a hat every time. Hello. I love being up there, and I love being down here. This church is on a journey too, and we are all in it together. And I don't know exactly what our destination will look like. And I don't know how our path there will wend its way. But I do know that I love what we are doing, and I love what we are becoming, and I love that we are doing it together. And I believe that our best, carefully offered and carefully received with each other will sustain us on this journey and in these times. So can I ask you now to take somebody's hand? Oh, here in uptight Yankee New England, take somebody's hand. Take the hand of your friend or your love in the pew with you. Take the hand of the good neighbor or stranger in front of or behind you. Get as connected as you can get. You guys, you got to hold with somebody behind you or in front of you. This was easier to do when I was a minister in the South. Because this is also what we have when we are sinking in quicksand, when we are swimming in the quicksand, when we are seeking a handhold or finding the shore. When we are immersed in change we have wanted, or change we never anticipated, or change we dreaded, this is still what we have, each other. We have the people we love, and the people we will love but don't know yet, and the people who come here in a common space and share themselves by being here. People who will hold us and be held by us as we live and struggle and learn and change. As the sailors say in this sailing state, you're still holding on, right? Oh, it's a long time. As the sailors say in this sailing state, you cannot control the wind. You can only adjust your sails. But we are not sailing alone. On this great ship that has sailed so long, we are all part of the crew. And together we will ride these waves and live what we believe and reconcile hard lessons and do our best, which will definitely not always be perfect. But it is and it will be enough. Enough to matter and enough to make a difference. Not only to the larger hurting world, but to each of us, to every one of us. Changing and changed together. Amen.